You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Penny Dreadful After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Penny Dreadful After Show.
Penny.
Oh, that went live. Great.
All right. Hey, guys. Welcome into the Penny Dreadful After Show. This week on AfterBuzz TV, Season 1, Episode 5, Closer Than Sisters. I am your host, Bobby DeMiro, joined, as always, by the Professor Marissa Serafini. And sitting in again with us this week, the wonderful Miss Sarah Stretton. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me back, guys.
I don't want to do any spoiler alerts, but Sarah, you may be around rest of the season or for several more episodes, too.
I might be coming back for a bit. I'm getting addicted.
Very cool. We hope you are back. Roxy will be back next week. I think that's official, so don't worry. She's coming back, guys. But Sarah, if you stay on with us, welcome. We hope you do.
There we go.
The show's just getting good, so we have to, guys. We have a lot to talk about today. Before we do that, though, let's plug something. As you guys know, Marissa Menounos is the founder of AfterBuzz TV.
Marissa Menounos? Are you combining?
Maria Menounos.
Wow.
I do that all the time because I do like every show with you. So I just want to say, oh, it's Marissa, Maria, whatever.
That is true. I don't blame you.
Let's try it again. There's no S in that. It's Maria Menounos is the founder of AfterBuzz TV, our bosses, as it were. And she's got a new book out, The Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness. That came out on, I believe, the 3rd. It's doing pretty well. She's been in New York promoting it and doing that sort of stuff. If you're interested in something like this, there's a ton of information. It is a very cool book. I caught myself leafing through it about 20 minutes ago when we were doing sound checks, and I had to put it away because I actually had to prep. But it is available at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, pretty much wherever books are sold. So you guys know what to do. Go grab that. How I Lost 40 Pounds and Kept It Off and How You Can Too. And oh, by the way, it's summertime. We're doing a pool party here at AfterBuzz in like a month, so we all got to slim down too. Believe me,
so
it's not just
you. Hand the book across the table, please.
Here you go, ladies.
Great,
awesome,
thanks.
Awesome, love it, love it.
Getting ready.
Toned abs, just what everyone wants.
Somehow that book's just going to disappear from the studio, and the two of you in about 6 weeks are going to be like cut.
We're not going
to know what happened.
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, that is Maria, not Marissa. This is Marissa right here.
What's up, guys?
Just had to get that on the record for sure. All right, let's talk about this episode now. We have really a lot to talk about, but in a different way. Typically, if you've been watching Penny Dreadful here on AfterBuzz, you know that we like to do two or three or four different topics because there's a lot of storylines going on every episode. Today, there is really only one storyline going on before we jump into Vanessa, or as we can start calling her now, Van.
Van.
Before we jump into that, it is my humble opinion that of the 5 Penny Dreadful episodes, this is the best one by far. Agree or disagree?
I'm going to go with disagree. I think the only reason, well, because for me, if you started the show with this episode, I would not be as invested in it. But because the other episodes have given us the context to really find this mystery about Vanessa appealing, this was like the release for that. But you needed everything else to make this episode work.
Oh, for
and
sure.
So, and to me, when you look at, they did her story very well. It was shot beautifully. The storytelling was great. But for me, it's more about the fact that all these other episodes made her so mysterious and so alluring. So I have to give it to those episodes still.
And, yeah, and also, I equate this as, you know, the ranking for this episode with Seance. I thought Seance was brilliantly, beautifully done as well. And that really added more to Vanessa's character, too. And then after that episode, now having this episode, explaining Vanessa's backstory and why she's such a mystery and a mysterious, enigmatic character. And also because Vanessa Ives is really the only original character that we've had in this story, because all the other ones based on Dracula, Frankenstein, you know, Dorian Gray, all those are already set stories that people know and have grown up with and whatever. And now Vanessa's completely new character, so they're building her story could be anything.
And as much detail and history as they gave us, I still have a ton of questions.
Oh, for sure.
Which I really enjoyed. But it's not to the point that I'm like, this wasn't enough. It was like, you gave me information, and now I'm like, what about all these other little details. Like, they gave us so much about the letters, and it just opened more doors.
For, maybe for me, then. Maybe I'm alone in this. I agree with you, Sarah. This is not, like, the standalone episode, so I know what you're saying about the first four, but I just thought this was, honest to God, one of the better hours of television I've ever seen. In fact, I texted that exact thing to Roxy. I was like, this is the best hour of television I might have ever seen. I was blown away. I don't know. We want to hear from you guys about that at home, but as we do that, let's jump right into this. So we see Vanessa writing and writing and writing. She's writing a letter to Mina, and then we go into the flashback immediately, and we start to learn a little bit about Vanessa growing up, Mina growing up, what it was like at the Ives and Murray, you know, compound between their two homes, and that gate that separated their two homes that was always open until, I believe she said, until the day it was not.
Something along those lines.
So we knew that was coming. But we get there and we start to learn a little bit about, the first thing I want to hit on is Peter, because he will come up later in this episode, but we see him pretty early on with the animals, the taxidermy, the creatures that they have. Vanessa talking about you have to name something to make it come alive, and learning a little bit about Peter there. And we first see that Peter is, and I don't mean this disparagingly, I'm searching for maybe a better word, but like kind of a wimp, kind of a little bit of a...
He's a little weak.
Yeah, he's a little weak.
He's
and
not
there's
the
not
big brawny guy.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the dichotomy from his father, who is the big brawny guy. Mm-hmm. And we learned that it's sort of been teased when these people are young, that they're kids, that Mina has these designations of marrying a you know, man with a mustache, I believe she said. Not a mustache, a mustache.
It's important.
Mustache.
That's a number one on that checklist of what a man needs to have.
On mustache. Her list, really.
She was ahead of her time. And then we learn that Mina teasing Vanessa about potentially marrying Peter, and we start to establish the relationship with those three there. What do we think about Peter thus far? Because he seems obviously like a weak-minded guy, knowing what happens to him. I was a little surprised in how the story went with Peter throughout the show, throughout the episode, because he gets older, of course, and is an adult when he goes to Africa and isn't killed. I was under the impression he was a kid dead in Africa.
I was, too.
I was confused with that. I mean, I didn't mind that we found out that he was actually older, but still wanting to go on these expeditions with his father. Like, that was his childhood type of dream. And so, and then we see in the seance episode where Vanessa's, like, channeling that voice. It sounds like a kid. So you would think it would be a young boy wanting these dreams and going on an exposition, but it was actually a man, which is interesting because it also reflects his character, too, because he is an older gentleman, but still a younger type of soul.
It's have you guys ever, when you were a kid, dreamt of growing up to become something?
Yes, of course. Who didn't?
I wanted to be a baseball player. Did it in college, did it professionally, did it for a relatively brief amount of time, but I realized that at some point you grow up and you kind of grow out of it. You know, we all do whatever the dream was. Maybe you wanted to be an astronaut or something. But with Peter, the reason I think Vanessa in that seance episode was using a child's voice is Peter mentions in this episode that was his childhood dream. You know he's wanted it from childhood. He wanted to go to Africa. And it's like he never really grew past that. Not that there's anything wrong with achieving your childhood dream, but you do sort of stunt your growth a little bit when you're 12 years old and you decide you want to go to Africa, and then you are one noted the rest of your life. So they're trying to maybe establish that even though Peter was an adult, he did a little bit have the mindset of a child in a way.
Yeah. It's also that he never grew up to live up to father's expectations and how he saw their relationship, I think, was reflected in that. I think in general, the storyline, the what we found out, really skewed my perspective on what the timeline has been for this whole story, for all the background. Because as both of you agreed, I thought Peter was a child. I also was convinced, like, I didn't know when the incident was going to happen between Min and Vanessa's lives. What's the distance between them separating, her getting this illness, then her coming back and re-entering their life, and how long have they been searching? Like, there's so many questions. But I liked that they led you in unexpected ways, and one of those ways was through Peter. So I found that really entertaining.
And also you mentioned the timeline, because we still don't have a direct clue of which year they're at and exactly how old Peter is at this point of his life. Because he seems like, by physical appearance, he looks like he's probably mid-20s, which is actually understandable and realistic for, I know, a lot of 20-year-old men still trying to achieve their lifelong dreams. So I can understand if he is around that age to still want to pursue all these expeditions.
And he has the ability to do that because he comes from a rich family. And, Sarah, to your point about trying to live up to his father, we see early in the flashback when he's younger, father comes home and presents him with that serval, that African mm-hmm. cat. By the way, if you've never gone to a zoo and seen a serval, do it. They're really cool. They just look like a big house cat in a way. They're mm-hmm. awesome. But he presents him with that serval, you know, pelt, and is very dismissive of him and kind of like, oh, here you go, take it. You know, I got to be with my girls, got to go for the feast. And even then, Peter is pushed away, and we get the impression right away that this is how the relationship is, that he idolizes Dad, mm-hmm. and Dad's like, okay, son, you know, here you go.
Yeah, so yeah, interest.
Like, Sir Malcolm didn't even give his son a hug. It was just a gentleman handshake. I'm like, he's still a kid at this point. You give your child a hug. Especially being gone that long. So, it definitely establishes the rift between those two and Peter growing up.
I mean, I agree. I think it was just, like, there's obviously an unawareness of, like, the nature of how Peter is, that he does seem more sensitive, that he does seem more emotional, that he is very in want of his father's love. But I think that you can't always say that his dad obviously isn't putting himself in that position. He thinks the girls need the emotional content versus his son being the spirit grinding man. You could suppose that maybe it was the mindset of like, here, do this, live up to my expectations in a way. Like trying to build him up to be stronger. At least that's how I rationalized it in my mind. He never actually said any of these things, but I'm like, I can see how their relationship developed.
Mm-hmm. And a father trying to build strength in a son may be different than a father trying to build strength in girls. You mm-hmm. need to treat the girls a little bit differently, or maybe wrongfully he thinks he needs to treat the girls a little mm-hmm. bit differently. And Peter is like, oh, son, you'll figure it out. Slap on the back. Go get it done. When he exactly. maybe needs a little more emotional support.
Yes.
Especially considering Peter is the butt of jokes. Like when Vanessa says, and we all laughed out loud about this, that was the season of Peter's inadequate beard.
Yeah.
Which is jumping a little bit ahead, but it's a Peter line. Great thing for him. I would have about the same beard, so I can't make too much fun of him. I'm certainly no...
He's trying to be a man.
Exactly, and he's not there yet. Although we see later that his beard, I thought, was respectable when he left for Africa.
Well, yeah. Maybe he got past that phase. That's why it was mentioned so with such love and caring. Because he grew out of it, so then you can make fun of it even more.
We see, too, a little bit about... Speaking of relationships, early on when young Vanessa is sitting at the table with Sir Malcolm Murray coming back from Africa, telling all these tall tales of cannibals and, you know, nyame, you know, meat, mm-hmm. eating meat and whatever. One of the things mentioned is Vanessa being Catholic, Mina being Protestant, and underscoring that dynamic between the two families that hadn't come into play and maybe doesn't come into play, but just shows that there are small differences between these two families that really are a big deal. I mean, a Catholic-Protestant issue in the United Kingdom, in England at that time, would have been a big deal. So,
yeah. And, you know, it's still kind of a big deal today.
I would say it's still a big deal in Vanessa's relationship with him, and I think it's going to proceed because if we get, this is jumping a little bit ahead, but how religion factors into what they see in each other and what they're kind of willing to do is a huge variance. Like, for instance, he said he can't forgive her. That's not part of, like, there's lines between what is acceptable, who is damned, who has sinned, who can be forgiven. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to, we're going to see that over and over again in this show.
And we've seen that a lot with Vanessa and her ritual, her prayer ritual, mm-hmm. which is certainly gives off a more Catholic flair than, you know, maybe anything else, Protestant or elsewhere, in anything in Christianity. And the idea that it's almost compulsive for her that she has to do this and she needs to do this, and this is one of the ways that she can cast out those demons, generally speaking, in every episode. Mm-hmm. But that's that idea of Catholicism with her, where Sir Malcolm Murray, A, isn't either going to accept it or begrudgingly accept it, or B, just flat out doesn't understand it mm-hmm. and can't do anything for her, and so they have to treat these things very differently. And we finally understand where that relationship comes from and where Vanessa's prayer activities in the first few episodes have come from with something like this in the flashback. One of the penultimate moments of this flashback, when Vanessa is young, she comes around the corner in the maze now and catches Malcolm, Sir Malcolm Murray, back from Africa cheating with Vanessa's mom.
Did anyone think this was going to be the catalyst for the incident?
No, but it makes a little bit of sense because Vanessa's so sexual.
Well, you can connect the dots and see the parallels, and you can definitely see some sort of, I guess, motivation. Like, you know, she walked in on someone having sex. It was a huge change for her emotionally, or she had self-realizations. Then later in the episode, we have Mina walking in on Vanessa. Like, you can see the instances, but I really thought that the event of their parents having this affair was going to blow up. I thought Vanessa was going to release that secret. At least that's where my mind was going, because I thought we were going to get more answers. So I was ready to just be fed information. I was ready for this incident to happen so much. So I thought it was very interesting that she's kept it a secret, and we still have yet to see her really come out with that to Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's always been kind of sly.
But if you think about it, back in the Seance episode, during that whole scene, there was the line, Vanessa saw you. And now seeing this episode, does that, you know, relate to this particular incident that Vanessa saw Sir Malcolm having sex with her mother? So if you tie it in that way, connect those two dots, I think it might have been that. So keeping it a secret, it might have already been told, not in the way that Vanessa wanted it to, but I think Sir Malcolm knows at this point.
Although, was it worse that Vanessa did keep it in and not tell anybody?
I think it might have been, because you can see that secret slowly eating inside of her, and then she kind of turned it, not to jump far ahead, but she kind of turned it on Mina in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was almost like she was destined to do that in a way.
Well, it was also, as we later heard, her unwillingness to shut the door. And she kept letting things happen. And that was kind of one of the first steps that she didn't, one, speak up, as she saw. Two, she didn't leave. She kept watching.
She
enjoyed it. Was her repeatedly not saying no and having this willingness for, as she said, wicked little deeds. Like, I think it was just that heightening of how much secrecy and how much deceit she can hold within her.
Yeah, she's a tough cookie, and she's a dark chick, and this is one of those instances where now we understand why she's such a dark chick and what happened to make her this way, because that was, one of the days where, I mean, her life changes as far as we're concerned. That was one of the first life-changing moment for her, was walking around the corner, seeing her mother and Sir Malcolm Murray, and then not only seeing it, but Marissa, you mentioned it, enjoying it and knowing she was enjoying it, admitting she was enjoying it, knew it was wrong, but still enjoyed it.
Yeah, and also being Catholic, cheating and coveting someone else's property is a big sin. So her, you know, acknowledging that and enjoying it, that's also a sin in and of itself.
Which maybe is why she gets so desperate later in the episode with Peter. But before we jump to Peter there, the next thing that I am thinking of in this episode is we see Mina grown up. We see Vanessa holding this secret in and hasn't told anybody, and several years later. I don't know how old Vanessa and Mina were supposed to be when Mina was engaged to Branson, maybe 18 or 20?
I would say, well, think about the time period.
A little earlier.
I would say even it could be younger.
Yeah.
Younger. I'm guessing around 16.
But yeah.
Who knows? Like, they're engaged. It's people got married a lot younger then.
All we know is it was the season of Peter's inadequate beard. That's all we know. So we can look that up in the history books. Maybe it's written down. But this is the first point where we see Vanessa talking about envying and or hating Mina, because in the letter, Vanessa wrote something to the effect of, I envied you, you know, pause, I may have actually hated you, which starts to develop that that portion of her relationship with Mina that, yes, Vanessa and Mina are very close, they are closer than sisters, but not everything is so rosy being that close. And when you get that close to somebody, you know all the good, but there's also bad.
You know
there.
All their faults as well.
And you rub each other the wrong way. To put a very casual analysis on Vanessa and Mina's relationship, if you've ever been around somebody a lot, you know, you get testy with each other, and this is a little bit deeper than that. But it's that same idea.
And it's also this weird introspection that Vanessa has of herself that was, like, for me, rearticulated at that point, that the I may have hated you, that she enjoyed it. All these are, like, those are, I feel like, people's deep, dark secrets that sometimes they don't even want to admit to themselves. And she's not only admitting it to herself, she's admitting it through the letter to Mina, to the whole audience.
Well, but not to jump ahead to the end with the letter, but that's the key idea, I think, is this is Vanessa's form of therapy. And this is all she knows how to do. She can't talk to anybody. She doesn't want to talk to anybody. Or we haven't seen her talk to anybody about this.
She hasn't even gone into a church, as we saw last episode, too. She can't even get herself to a priest to do a confession, a real confession
this
that way.
This is confession.
This is her therapy. This is her catharsis confession.
And she's just never, she's not, where's she going to mail them? She's not going to mail them anywhere. Right. You know, but just the idea of writing down all these letters and having countless letters. I mean, whatever that was.
Exactly. Like, yeah. She must have been writing for quite some time.
I have a prediction on those, though.
But we've all done that thing where you almost write something down or you think something through for a couple minutes before you act on it, and you feel a little bit better. Maybe the situation isn't solved, but that maybe is her thing that when it gets too stressful or too over the top, this is what she does to write the letters to say, to A, maybe have a record of what she's feeling, mm-hmm. and B, to let it out a little bit without doing something extremely damaging to herself or somebody else, even though she's done some pretty damaging stuff already. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe it is catharsis in a way for her.
It's a healthier catharsis.
It's her confession in a way. Mm-hmm. It's her, and this is a diary for her as much as it is a diary or a letter to Mina.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so Vanessa, we learned that she hates Mina. She may hate Mina. She definitely envies Mina for the life that Mina has. And starts talking about, you know, how could it be your life? I thought I would do this before you and whatever. I don't remember the exact words, obviously. And we come to the scene with Peter now. Peter's grown up, mid-20s, whatever he is, with a little bit fuller of a beard. And we come to that scene in the maze, in the garden maze, which I don't remember maze. Which one of you said it. Was it you about the maze?
I really don't like these mazes. I do not understand. I've been in one because they have them in certain countries because they were made for, like, beauty, for enjoyment. And I don't understand why you would ever make a garden that's a maze.
You really can only enjoy it on the top, looking down. Yes. Once you're in it, it's just like bushes.
Exactly. It's like going in from the viewer perspective, we get the angle. We're like, oh, we know this, like, you can get out of it. We know how big it is. Going into one of those things is horrible. And you're literally like, there's bushes so everywhere.
You get overwhelmed.
Keep coming back.
Here's a pro tip for you guys, something never to do. In the city of North Carolina where I'm from, every Halloween, every fall, they have a maze. They have like a corn maze. It's not as articulate as this, but they have these big corn mazes. And one year we thought it'd be fun. We go up into it. We go in the corn maze. First off, there's a ton of kids running around in there, so it was not a very fun experience. And it took us hours to get out because we don't know where we're going. So unless you have hours of time on your hands and it's like October 35th, maybe don't go to a maze. So I'm with you.
But I mean, Vanessa seemed to really enjoy it. She
Vanessa,
kept going back to the
everything
maze.
We hate, Vanessa loves. I think that's pretty clear.
And I think that's exactly why. You think a maze would be something you wouldn't enjoy, but it just shows Vanessa's character that she's not exactly the kind of person that you think she would be, but she's completely opposite.
Also, the maze represents so much like the secrecy, the trials, the danger. Mm-hmm. You don't know what to expect when you enter the maze. You don't know if you're going to get out.
Being lost,
and I think it's the journey of Vanessa. Like, is she going to get out of the situation she's in? Is she ever going to be able to be free? And I think the Vanessa we've seen in the past, the original episodes, we've seen that she's making progress. She has some level of control. She's learned to kind of accept this clairvoyancy, like how she had the cards. And how much time and how that willingness partook and how she's kind of learned to, I guess, live and understand her.
And cope with it.
Yes. And it's a very, her emotional relationship to her powers as of now, I'm very interested in. Because she's obviously gotten to the point that she's willing to use them. And it's not just for Mina. It's mainly for Mina, but not completely.
Yeah.
So But that's very curious to me.
It's also interesting, during this whole flashback, we see that her condition is really only affecting herself. But now, in all these past episodes, that it's kind of affecting everyone else, too, and they're getting involved in a way. I mean, we see Vanessa's mother, like, trying to help her through her years. But now, with the ongoing story, we have three other people involved. Mm-hmm. So it just shows that it's progressively getting worse. This whatever's after her.
Yeah, she can't keep it to herself. And my biggest question is, does she want to keep it to herself? Maybe we're going too far ahead into predictions or into whatever. So let's just think that. But I mean, we say that Vanessa is doing this to try to find Mina. And Vanessa has been very explicit saying she's working with Malcolm to find Mina. I kind of question her motives. I don't know where to go from that, but I still think we don't know the whole story with Vanessa. You said you have a lot of questions. Even with this whole flashback, I still think there's a lot more to it about what finding Mina means to Vanessa. It's not just, you know, quote unquote, rescuing Mina or whatever. There's something else there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Closer Than Sisters is the title. Like, they don't let really anything completely out of the bag in this episode. Like, for as much history as I wish we got one storyline, and it was like, this is what happened. It was like, hold on.
Kind of.
It's still not completely clicking. Like, I feel like I'm, like, assembling a puzzle, and I'm still like, and they're like, oh, here's the base. And I'm like, but what's going on? What are all these pieces?
It's just like the maze. You think you turned down the right way. You don't know if you really did. And you can't find out until you hit the dead end. You got to go all the way back.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just going to get this.
So in that maze, the first time in the maze, Vanessa sees the first bad experience in the maze. Vanessa sees her mother and Malcolm Murray. The second bad experience in the maze, walking with Peter, he informs her he's going to Africa.
After, though, we see a second time in the maze where she finds Mina kissing.
Oh, yes. I just meant bad experiences. Oh, yeah, just the bad ones. Yeah, the second bad one was Peter going to Africa, telling her he's going to Africa. She tries to kiss him or does kiss him, and he tries to, you know, she wants him to do whatever back, and he doesn't because he's kind of a wimp. She's hot.
He's not an assertive guy.
She was also extremely aggressive.
She was.
That's okay with me.
It's just like if but you that wasn't okay. Let's okay just think about like him. If you reversed the roles.
Oh,
and like
100%.
She was not okay exactly with it, and you had a guy like being as aggressive as she was.
100%.
Like, hey.
But Peter is certainly interested in her. It's not like she's making unwanted advances.
Oh,
to
I completely
him
disagree.
Really?
Yes.
I'm not sure Peter's completely interested.
I'm not sure if Peter thinks he likes women.
No, he definitely likes. I think he's interested in her. I think he almost took it for granted that, like, oh, we'll get married or whatever, but this is my dream. I have to go to Africa. This is my thing, and Vanessa's going to be there. And he didn't realize how assertive she was.
I think definitely the relationship right now is very platonic and very close. And we can see Peter obviously appreciates his relationship with Vanessa and probably doesn't want to ruin it. He wants to go on expeditions first. But I think generally he does care about Vanessa.
I think he cares about Vanessa as, like, a sister. Because that's how it always felt. Like, watching their relationship, I always felt like it was really platonic. And I always felt like it was, like, I just want my daddy to love me. And everyone else, he was, like, very fine with. I don't know. I was not getting the attraction towards Vanessa at all from him.
I was. Not in a super physical, you know, sultry way like what she was bringing in the maze or whatever. But I took it to mean because he's not very assertive, because he's a little bit of a wimp, I took his life in his eyes, and maybe this is reading way too far into it, to be along the lines of his goals were to get his dad to approve of him, to go to Africa and be an explorer. That's my main goal. And then I'm going to come home. I'm going to marry Vanessa. We're going to live on the estate because it's always been good enough for me. And this is where we'll be happy together, blah, 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 because this is the way it's always been. That was my attitude with him.
I just feel like one thing that's been reiterated to us like 1,000 times in the show is how appealing Vanessa is.
For sure.
And how like everyone and everything wants her. And the fact that he did not want her makes me think like he just really doesn't want her.
I just thought he was scared. I just thought he was scared because she was so assertive and he was not
ready for
it. You know, and maybe it was a religion thing and a time thing and a custom thing, obviously, and all those things come into play, I guess.
Well,
I
think obviously all the above relationship didn't go so well.
No, it did not. But so he brushes her off. He leaves. You know how mother is about time or whatever it was he said.
Yeah.
Such a lame excuse.
Poor Vanessa. And it comes around, we're going to see later, that was a big thing on her mind in that scene in bed with Peter later. But as he gets brushed off and walks away, the letter contains something interesting because we see Vanessa in the maze broken. And she says something along the lines of, don't go to Africa, you'll never survive, you're beautifully weak. That's what I should have called him instead of a wimp. He's beautifully weak. Mm-hmm. Very beautiful point, I guess, a very beautiful and tragic thing to say, that don't chase your dream, you can't handle it.
And also, it felt like self-blame to me. Like, as she was reading it, is that I should have.
Yes.
Yeah. I should have, but what some if evil almost with inside me, some anger at being rejected, something kept me back from saying these things to you, and it eventually somewhat led to his demise.
Yeah, and
I mean, she tried to recover a little later in a way. Yeah,
but
maybe.
That one moment has haunted Vanessa this whole time, and that was the big what if moment.
She has some very big guilt issues. Like,
well, I mean, hey, she's constantly guilty. She's a good Catholic, as she should.
And I think that goes back to, I think Vanessa is deep down a good person, but all these bad things are happening to her.
Well, in this key scene, the first scene, the Sir Malcolm Murray and Vanessa's mother having sex was the catalyst. I agree that it was, and we didn't really see it coming. But this key scene was the catalyst specifically for the demon. When she prays after Peter rejects her that night or whatever it was, that's the first time that a demon specifically answers her and talks to her and something weird and different has happened.
Yeah, because God didn't answer, but someone else did.
Yes.
Which is interesting because possessions, the only way you can get possessed is to let the devil inside you. You have to willingly let them in there, like inside you. So she let something in.
You're like, okay, I'm
fine. I don't know. All I know is she was like, there's something behind my back all the time. And I guess that's like someone about to knock on the door. And then they finally knocked. I don't know.
Well, it's the same thing as Fenton. Last episode or two episodes ago when he was talking about, do you know that feeling you get and the hair on the back of your neck stands up and there's the thing in the room? It's that same idea. There's something perennially on your back and you either acknowledge it and let it in or you just brush it away and don't let it in. And
or you're Vanessa and you kind of take a whole nother route.
Meaning she like embraced it a little bit?
Yeah. Embraced.
She let it in.
Yeah. I'm reacting to this already.
Okay, so Vanessa did let it in because the next significant thing is the night before Mina's wedding. Mm. Mina and Vanessa are in bed. Vanessa's not sleeping. Gets up, walks away, goes downstairs, sees Captain Branson, and says, you know, hey, come with me. I got something to show you. And shows him the taxidermy and all that kind of stuff. If, truth be told, if I were engaged to a young woman who... you know, dabbled in taxidermy, and I didn't know about it
but
until the night
before
the wedding.
Dabble
oh,
in
I know
taxidermy.
That. Yeah, it's
this
just
is a mutual hobby. But this is beyond bonding.
It's
that's
a
bond
it's a
over
weird
taxidermy.
Though, right?
But I think it was interesting how Vanessa was kind of. I didn't know how involved Vanessa was with the taxidermy, but it seemed like she was passing that off as Mina's obsession, and trying to obviously. Put that wedge between Branson and Mina. Be like, hey, you're about to marry this chick, but she likes this weird type of hobby.
But then at the end of her monologue, it's about how obsessive she is with her bird's mirrored eyes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, what was that line about, if I could, I'd put mirrors behind the whole world?
To make everything
to
alive.
To make everything alive.
But a lot
to
of stuff is alive.
To make everything live at its fullest.
I guess. I mean, is Vanessa living at her fullest? Vanessa's dealing with the underworld, the dead world.
She's definitely living more than other people.
She's like living at times more than other people and also surrounded by death more than other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's that she doesn't really live in anywhere in the middle. Everything's always in extremes. But taxidermy, mirrored eyes. What was it? Oh, there was a squirrel. There was Peter's. Mm-hmm. There was a like aggressive bird. That was Vanessa's.
Yeah.
Did we ever figure out what was Mina's?
I think the squirrel was Mina's.
Oh, was it?
Because Peter's was that
Peter's
cat.
Was the
or the monkey.
Monkey.
The monkey the first.
Monkey.
And then the serval skin, which I assume he would have, the serval coat, which he would have used. And then Mina was the squirrel, I think.
But if you think about the symbolism of the animals per person, yeah, and being a bird, if it was like a falcon or a raven, something with a negative connotation for being Vanessa's
It was
animal.
Also just in a very aggressive stance. Like its wings were up and it was like going force. It felt like it was like...
Beak open. Absolutely.
A very diabolical aggressive. Animal.
Yeah.
Which reflects me. I mean, Vanessa.
I like things that fly.
Okay. So after we get our lesson in taxidermy from Vanessa... We have this sex scene, which I thought was really well done considering what the goals of this scene were, too. It was very different from some of the other sex scenes we've seen, like with Ethan Abrona or whomever. But very interesting and very well done. And we know, of course, Mina's going to walk in, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't be seeing something like this. And it comes full circle. Vanessa walks in on a scandalous pair. Now, Mina walks in on a scandalous pair and is directly betrayed the night before her wedding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She broke the girl code.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And he yeah. Let's be honest, Captain Branson. Captain Branson's a doofus to do something like that. Come on, dude. What are you doing? Do you think, and I know this is out there maybe, but was Captain Branson just a regular old human and lust got the best of him? Or had the underworld gotten to him or he was somebody planted to make Vanessa do this to Mina?
I don't know.
Go right ahead.
Oh, I think Branson was just a pawn in everything in this whole situation. I think maybe he himself, his character, is just maybe not a good person. And to do that with Vanessa and to portray Mina on the night before their wedding. So I think he was just that standalone guy who was just there to ruin stuff.
And I also think that there's a significance in... There's so much focus on eyes in this episode. It starts with it, ends with it, and they're constantly pictured throughout the entire episode. And in this instant, you got the eye lock between Mina and Vanessa, and it was both the human version of their eyes. And I was trying to watch because although Vanessa looked ghastly and like scary, it was still remained that human connection where it was something that she was going to have to live with. She had full memory, she had full kind of knowledge, whether it was, it wasn't like something took over her. Versus in other instances throughout the episode, there was a change. Like, people had black eyes, people had white eyes. That seemed to me to be the stronger points of influence of the devil, of the serpent, of whatnot. This seemed a very human act.
Maybe you guys will disagree with me again about this. It wouldn't be the first time. But was Vanessa ever so slightly, just a little bit, enjoying it?
Oh, she was.
Okay. So I'm not crazy.
No, I don't think you are.
Okay.
I'm being beckoned.
Uh-oh, are we losing
She's
you?
She's being summoned.
I'm being beckoned.
Hey, if you don't already, guys, watch Game of Thrones. The after show, Sarah Stretton is on it.
Yeah.
And I know they have a big night this evening, so we need to...
Oh, goodbye.
Goodbye, world. Goodbye, Sarah.
If you're listening to the podcast, Phil's in here giving her a
hand. You should
definitely
watch.
Literally.
It's quite
She's being escorted.
But thank you for filling in, Sarah. I mean, you'll be here next week, right?
Yes. She'll be here next week. Roxy will be back next week. Everything will be back to normal again. We haven't really missed a beat, though. So, Professor Serafini, it's just you and me.
All right.
Let's do this. All right.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I am, too. We don't even like Sarah. Oh, wait. She's still in the room. Don't say that yet.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold up.
All right. Where were we? So, Mina finds out. We know that Vanessa took just the slightest bit of enjoyment. She didn't have a full smile. But it was a little bit of, I think, you know, a little bit of, I know what I'm doing. I wanted to do this. Hey, girl, I don't know what the attitude was, but she was enjoying it a little bit, which makes it all the more evil,
of course.
Yeah,
because also, even before that, all the events leading up to it, we know that Peter is going to eventually leave on this expedition. We know that Mina was going to eventually leave her. So Vanessa was going to be all by herself, and that envy and jealousy came out of Vanessa. So anything to maybe ruin Mina's relationship with Branson, to have her stay in a way so she wouldn't be alone, she would do something this devilish to keep, just to keep Mina in her life.
Yeah, and not surprisingly, Mina...
Enjoy it as well.
Well, that is Vanessa. Vanessa's not going to have sex she doesn't enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we know that by now.
Yeah, she gets it.
She gets after it. Good for her. Because I have a feeling in the 1890s, 1880s in Victorian England, not a lot of women were getting it after it the same way.
No, definitely not the same way.
Good for Vanessa. But obviously, not surprisingly, Mina... totally shuts her out and is devastated. Peter is devastated. Peter says something along the lines of, I can't remember what he says about, I expected my trip, my travels to kill my family, and I didn't know it'd be a worthless little girl or whatever it is.
No, so Malcolm said that.
Malcolm, not Peter. Yeah. Malcolm said this. I'm sorry, yes.
Which was really cold.
Yeah.
And because having all these episodes, knowing that Vanessa and Malcolm have a pretty close relationship, but now knowing that this event occurred and they're... such a dark, cold event that happened, and how Sir Malcolm just literally shut his family and his life away from Vanessa and closed that gate on her. That was cold.
Well, and closing that gate is a great transition point, because from this point on, Vanessa is sick the entire time. And we don't know what she has, but she collapses out in the wilderness between the gate and the two houses.
Yeah.
She has this brain issue. She goes to this asylum.
Like another catalyst.
Oh, totally.
For this.
Totally.
Her condition.
Totally and completely. And she goes to this asylum, doesn't want to. The mother, remember, takes her and says, you're going to London, we're going to this place. And Vanessa's like, I don't want to go to this asylum, mother. And then asks her mother to let her die.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't expecting that, because we see Vanessa, it seems like she embraces life, but then to be such a low point in her life to just not care about anyone, because everyone at this point has literally left her except for her family. But the people that she loved and cared about, Mina, Peter, even Sir Malcolm, they're all gone. So she really has nothing left to get to this point where she just wants to die, sad.
And if the demons, if the underworld has been speaking to her, if the master has been already talking to her, which we've seen it happen at least once, maybe she's at a point where she just says, I can't deal with any of this anymore. Not only have I lost everybody in the mortal realm, but I have voices, I have possession. She may not know it's possession yet, but I have something going on with me, and I cannot face this anymore. I'm ready to die. It obviously doesn't happen.
No.
But... She goes to this asylum, which this asylum reminded me ever so slightly of the asylum in American Horror Story.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. Because it was just the way that they were...
Stylistically, it was pretty much the same.
100%. The way that they are, quote-unquote, treating patients, but also kind of torturing them with the stuff that's going on. And let's talk about the damn lobotomy.
Oh, that lobotomy. Poor Sarah. She cannot handle that.
Good thing
scene.
She left, actually.
Yeah.
It's perfect timing for her to leave. That was awesome.
I had
awesome.
Like, calm her down. It's okay, Sarah. It's almost over. But... it was interesting about that lobotomy because we see the doctor like pressing around where he drilled that hole, and you think blood would be coming out. I don't know exactly how they do lobotomies.
I don't know either. I didn't think so. I thought the point of poking holes like that was to relieve pressure on the brain and do other stuff. But I thought if you put them in a specific place, you maybe don't hit a blood vessel. Like you have blood vessels in your temples right here, and he put it a little bit further back. So maybe there's not as much blood. Coming out.
I don't know how lobotomies are executed.
Never cut a guy's skull open.
Yeah, so, me neither. Yeah. I mean, this is a good thing I haven't.
My bad.
But it made me think to last episode where we see the whole scene with Frankenstein and Van Helsing, where Van Helsing was talking about he built this chemical that helped, you know, explain the coagulation of blood. And then we see this particular scene with the lobotomy that her blood was kind of coagulated. She wasn't bleeding. So it made me think, it might get into predictions territory, that what if Vanessa has suddenly kind of become some type of creature? Is she part vampire or whatever this master creature is coming after her?
Remember what she did to that Dr. Christopher Banning? When her parents were in the office with Banning, Banning recognized when Vanessa spoke. He said, "Mom and Dad, leave the room immediately." Vanessa goes up to the window. He never tells her his middle name, but she knows it.
Matthew.
No, she said Matthew. It was Christopher Matthew. Christopher Banning, and she goes, "Christopher Matthew Banning." And that look he gave, which is like, there's no way she could know this, get help, push the button. But then remember what she does, talking about blood and being a vampire. She opens her mouth and almost has fang-looking thing and like goes after his neck.
Absolutely. Like a vampire.
Absolutely.
So I'm thinking this whole process was to just tell the audience that maybe she's not purely human anymore. Maybe she is part demonic creature, whatever that's after her.
Yeah. But the lobotomy, at least at the point, sort of takes care of her. They cut her hair off. They poke a hole in her brain. Poor they thing. Make her, you know, catatonic, obviously.
And she is catatonic.
And she goes home.
But even before that, when they were watering her down, those ice baths, that was torturous just to watch. And even spraying her down, like, I loved how they filmed that because she was pretty much crucified.
Exactly.
And the religious symbolism of the visualization and all that, I thought was beautiful, especially for her character being a Roman Catholic, but, like, questioning everything and all these dark things are happening to her. Which, the dichotomy between the good and evil, especially within this type of character, it's beautiful how they're portraying it.
And she knows, with that meeting with Dr. Banning, when she was herself and hadn't been, you know, put on by this demon yet or whatever, when her parents are still in the room, they're talking about all the options Dr. Banning has for her, and he says, well, you know, but whatever, if these options don't work, we also have surgical options at our disposal. And the first thing she said was, let's do that. Let's have the surgery. Surgery in this manner in the 1880s, 1890s is a fairly certain significant side effect or death.
Death.
But for Vanessa, it's like regular Vanessa's like, I'm done. Just do the surgery. I don't care. Yeah. Well, either it's going to fix me or I'm dying.
Yeah. At that point, she wanted to die.
Yeah.
So, of course, she would be all for the surgery. And especially her chances of living weren't that great either.
Yeah.
Especially back in that time.
And then, but unfortunately, she gets possessed when this happens with Vanessa, she wants the surgery. Normal Vanessa is there. She's very down. She's very at the pit of just life right now. And then she gets up after her parents leave. She starts talking, and we learn that she's possessed. Where do these powers come from that just magically turn on and off at almost the snap of a finger?
Well,
and who's pressing the button?
And that's the hard thing. It was like, what happens for her to go in and out of these stages, these episodes? Because we have moment of lucidity, and then she just, it's, you know, it's on and off like a light switch. And it makes me think it's this creature or whatever is possessed spirit. Or it's really hard to tell what it is because it's so vague. But is it this thing that's inside of her that's causing all these on and off switches? When she's with people that she loves, sometimes she is lucid. But then if it seems like if someone says something or does something, then she immediately turns.
Yeah. And I don't know what the impetus is yet. I'm sure if we went back in every episode and looked at the turn, we could probably find enough commonalities to narrow it down. But at that point, we would still be guessing. We don't know the turn yet. We don't know the thing that's creating this. So it's kind of fun to think about. That's kind of prediction territory a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting because we see that whole scene when Peter comes back and talks to her, and is actually a very, very calm scene. And you think she's going to turn, like you, that big,
yeah, man,
dramatic.
I was like on the edge of my seat. I thought she was going
to climax. We're like, oh, please don't kiss her. You know, who knows what's going to happen?
She's going to bite his nose off or something.
Bite his mouth off, bite his tongue out. Who knows? Like, my mind went a million different places. But you think something like that would happen, but it didn't. And even after Peter left, then we get to, I mean, not to jump ahead, but then we get to the crazy turn of her character.
No, let's talk about that now, because we've got, let's go to Peter now as we kind of wrap this up, because I know we want to get to news and gossip and predictions. So yeah, just a couple more minutes on this. But real quick with Peter, he gets so close to her, shouldn't have kissed her, but as it turns out, wasn't all that bad. But then in a weird moment of lucidity, she says, what was it? She says, you should have kissed me. Will you kiss me now? So she remembered that exact moment in the maze.
Still haunting her.
Still haunting her, but regular her, not...
Yeah.
It appears not possessed her. Regular her. Regular Vanessa.
Regular.
Decaf Vanessa. And then she says to Peter, very simply, you're going to die there.
Mm-hmm.
Totally changes his mood, as it probably should.
But I think also that one line was the thing inside of her, knowing the future, knowing how events are going to pan out. That was, I think that moment might have been the switch.
Yeah, and that actually may be true, because then Peter goes downstairs, lies to Miss Ives, says, mm-hmm, oh, I couldn't make her out. What'd she say? I couldn't make her out.
Yep.
Yeah, you heard every word. She was really clear. But why not tell Miss Ives? Why would Peter lie about that?
Maybe he has his secrets, too.
Or maybe he's just so horrified about it he doesn't want. He's
yeah,
in denial.
I mean, he always wanted to go on these expeditions, and now Vanessa telling you're going to die on this expedition, he still went anyways.
Yeah.
Decided to go against that.
And then this is where the show really gets good. This episode really gets good. Because after Peter leaves, Malcolm shows up in the room. Not real Malcolm.
No.
Like a weird possessed devil Malcolm that actually may not be there, but is there in Vanessa's head. And starts reading Keats to her. Did you end up looking up the poem?
Keats? No, I couldn't. He is a romantic
yeah,
poet, though. In Victorian England at that time.
The only words I got were darkling, I listen, and in, cut off.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to do it. We were watching the whole thing. I was just like frantically, and I was like, I just got to watch this. So I didn't get the words. We can look them up later. Actually, yeah, we'll post them on YouTube if I remember to do this. I'll do that tonight. We'll post the lines on YouTube. Or, you know what? One of our intrepid viewers who's awesome at commenting will probably already have them. So maybe they'll be on YouTube for us.
Which is, but if you think about it, if Vanessa knows Keats, a romantic poet, and then go back to the episode where she finds Frankenstein with romantic literature as well, that was the devil or whatever creature, the spirit's way into Vanessa to force something that she could relate to and enjoy.
So you're telling me romantic literature, romantic poetry is the devil?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that could have been the door, the pathway into
her. For sure. To yeah, get into her psyche or whatever it
exactly,
is. To get her soul as opposed to just having her body. That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
But basically we have naked Vanessa who's Vanessa's vision is probably that she's having sex,
mm-hmm,
because she starts to kiss this really Malcolm. But from the mom's point of view, when she hears the clattering, it's just naked Vanessa thrusting and doing all kinds of stuff. And then mom just, poof, drops dead.
Dead. But we saw that moment right before the mother dies that Vanessa looks over and her eyes are white, which
yeah,
is not the color that I was expecting. I expected black. You know,
was it white or was it just rolled back?
It might have been rolled back. But I think it was at that moment, too, where this demon we didn't see... But maybe that demon, whatever, was, you know, having sex with her, like, went over to the mother and killed her.
Yeah. Or the mother maybe died from something as simple as fright.
Shock.
Yeah, who knows? It could have been something even more simple that the mother was so shocked at what she was seeing, she couldn't take it anymore. And there's another dead person in the midst of Vanessa.
Yep.
We see it again. We have the funeral of Vanessa, and then the key scene for us, I feel like we're kind of jumping forward because we got a news, but it's okay. Yeah. The key scene for us is on the beach. Vanessa sees Mina. Mina forgives her. You've had so much suffering. This is so sad. Mina married to Mr. Harker, which I wrote
Jonathan
down.
Jonathan Harker, who was the main protagonist in Dracula.
Mm-hmm. So everything's just coming together.
It's piecing together.
Just all beautifully.
It's so brilliant how Peter Jeffels just ties everything together.
And they take their time doing it. And then Mina asks for help from Vanessa and disappears. Like, mm-hmm. washed away into the sky, disappears. And Vanessa's left there alone again. And we learn that Mina was not actually human Mina, but another vision.
Another vision.
Thing.
But it was interesting that Mina, at this point, it seems like she was good and evil. Not just one thing or the other. It was actual Mina, but still having that internal conflict with her. So something's possessing Mina as well.
Well, that's the thing. Vanessa walked into Malcolm Murray and her mother having sex, and then all this weird stuff happened to Vanessa. Mina walks into Vanessa and Captain Branson having sex. Maybe the same cycle of weird stuff happens to Mina. The moral of the story is don't walk up on people having sex. I mean, you never know.
Come on.
I mean, don't anyways.
That's
it's weird.
That's what locked doors are for.
if this maze is rocking, don't come a-knocking.
Okay. Don't go figuring it out.
And then we learn about the letter. I wrote down in that letter what was the postscript because she wrote the postscript.
Yeah, I was what's the last line?
She ended up saying it anyways, so that's okay. And it was about Malcolm loving Mina.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't as big as maybe as deep as something I thought it might be. But she's writing letters and not mailing them, which is the catharsis idea. And it's the obsession idea.
Yeah, I have a prediction on those two.
Well, we're kind of about there because really the end of the show wraps up where the first four episodes began, which is we see what brought Vanessa and Malcolm to work together. And there's a lot that will come from that, but we understand the tension between the two of them, the relationship between the two of them.
Love, hate.
Total love, hate. And I think really hate with an end goal. There's no love there to me. It's just you hate me, I hate you, but we have a common enemy. And when you have a common enemy and a common objective means two people who hate each other can get along in the short term to get that objective.
Yeah.
So now we understand that a little better, thankfully.
Uh-huh. Yep. Now we understand, exactly what you said.
Let's do it. Let's do some news and gossip.
News.
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, real quickly. The Wrap had a nice interview with Timothy Dalton, and it was just, questioning him about, his character, what drew him to Penny Dreadful. And he says he loved the writing, he loved the words, and I quote, "I love good drama. When you start reading a story that grips you and involves you and makes you ask lots of questions, which we definitely do, that makes you turn the page in excitement about what is going to happen next, you know you're reading something good." And then the interview is really fun. You read it on therap.com. It kind of gets inverted because Timothy Dalton didn't see episode 5 yet, but the interviewer got a screener and did. So it was reverse. And so Timothy was asking the interviewer, "Did you see it? What was the episode about?" and stuff. So it's a really humorous interview. Definitely check that out. And then they also just bonded about how Eva Green, John Logan, and Timothy Dalton, they're all part of the 007 James Bond franchise, and they just bonded over that as well.
It'd be tough to be a decent to good British-English actor and not be part of that franchise at this point, right?
I mean, go watch License to Kill. Come on. It's great. And then also in recent news, Eva Green, she's in the new upcoming movie, Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. She plays Femme Fatale Dame, which I'm definitely going to go watch this. But the for promotion, she's promoting everything right now for that film. But they released the new promotional posters, and her poster actually got banned from the MPAA and deeming it too sexy. And we can tell with this photo, if you're listening on iTunes, definitely check out YouTube. We have the photo queued up here. But it's Eva Green and her character, very sexy in this very see-through linen type of outfit.
What was the name of the cartoon rabbit, the female rabbit that was totally over-sexualized?
Oh, goodness. I know who you're talking
about. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Jessica.
Jessica Rabbit.
Yes, that's right, Jessica Rabbit.
That is what this reminds me of a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But they deemed this poster too sexy, and they banned it.
This is 2014, right?
Yes, 2014.
Okay.
And then Eva Green actually defended this poster, and she said, "I find it a bit odd. It seems like it's all just publicity, and it's just a lot of noise for nothing," which I find interesting because she also adds that because they said the original poster is too sexy, she said that you have so many more violent things in the movie business. I think she's just comparing that. We can have a film that's so violent and that not be a problem, but being too sexy is a problem. So
listen, we could talk about that every day, all day, about American views on sexuality in media versus, yeah, like, European views. This in Europe, not to generalize, but in a lot of places in Europe or Western Europe, people would see this and go, oh, whatever. But in a lot of places in America, it's a scandal.
It's too sexy. I mean, come on, Eva Green, she's a sexy woman. But, so the Weinstein Company released another poster, which is actually the funny thing about this poster. It's the exact same poster, but a lower resolution. They haven't changed anything. It's just a lower resolution, but I guess that's too sexy. I think it just blurs the image, or definitely around the chest area a bit, so it's not as revealing as the original high-def poster. But I just find it funny. It's the same poster, just lower resolution.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then of course we know Penny Dreadful got renewed for season 2.
Not a surprise at all. No. I don't think
the show is so brilliantly good. Okay, so it got renewed for second season. I think we're all excited about that. And John Logan is writing all the episodes for season 2, which has an order of 10 episodes instead of 8 like season 1. So it's got up 2 more episodes. But according to this article that I pulled, Penny Dreadful's strength has been time-shifted viewings because the way people are watching Penny Dreadful, it's not the normal way that we have been doing, like, DVR. It's their Showtime demand, which is where Penny Dreadful is getting all the numbers. The series, which has amassed 900,000 views for the first episode before the premiere, so that was during the Showtime on-demand, and it was the biggest sneak preview ever for Showtime. And they've had the on-demand for the last 12 years.
Interesting.
Yeah. And
I was going to say, this is airing in different time slots on different channels in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and maybe Ireland, I want to say, and a couple other countries. So the ratings game, like, Marissa, we do Salem. Salem's a WGN show here in America, a little bit different. This is an international show airing in a lot of different places. So their ratings game is on a totally different metric scale than anything we've seen yet.
Yes, absolutely. And David Nevins, the Showtime Network, said about the show, because he thinks, because it's a genre show, it has done incredibly well in all news ways that you can watch. So that being the internet on demand. So it's definitely getting the numbers, maybe not from live views, but definitely getting the numbers in all different media platforms.
This is a binge show. This is a total binge show to me.
Totally.
I think this is something I'm going to take. I go to North Carolina, go home in a few weeks, 6 weeks from now. I'm going to take this thing. I have a couple people I know would want to watch this. We're going to watch all 8 episodes.
I'm
I can tell you right now.
Everyone to watch Penny Dreadful because it is so brilliant, so beautiful, so thought-provoking and intriguing. And so the season 2 will go into production later this year of 2014, and we'll shoot again on location in Dublin, slated for the 2015 season.
Lovely.
So excited. And that is it for news.
Speaking of 2015 and the future, let's talk about predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
I've got a good one. I know you do, too. All right, go first. You're, like, busting at the seams.
Oh, I was like, okay. So I think I gave him a big prediction about Vanessa being somewhat of this demonic creature that's after her. She's definitely changing physically and mentally. But also the letters that we saw when she was finishing and closing the letters, she wrote on the envelope, Jonathan Harker. And if you know the Dracula story, Mina and Jonathan were passing letters throughout the whole story. So it makes me think, because Mina is gone, and the way Penny Dreadful is writing their story, because Mina's gone and absent at this time, it makes me think that maybe that Vanessa's writing these letters to Jonathan Harker instead of Mina's. So she's writing on behalf of Mina. But also, I'm going to speak on both sides of my mouth here, that we see that Vanessa hasn't sent any of these letters. She's containing them all together. So I don't know. Why is she keeping them?
I guess we'll see. I like the catharsis thing, but maybe it's not. It could be something far more deep than that. My prediction is the Mina we saw at the end of this episode forgiving Vanessa, obviously because she disappeared into thin air, it was not human Mina.
Right.
It also had nothing to do with Mina. That's the master, the devil, the demon, whatever you want to talk about, getting to Vanessa in another way. And I think what's going on is that master knows that to get Vanessa, he needs, or she needs, Vanessa to come after him. And so when he puts Mina out there and says, please rescue me, try to find me, I'm Mina, I need your help. Total red herring. It's not Mina. She doesn't need help. She's living happily. I don't even know if she's actually with Mr. Harker or if she's just totally lying or there's something else going on.
Yeah.
Who knows? But this demon, this devil needs Vanessa to come to him and dance the dance with him or her so that they can dance the dance back with Vanessa and get what they are after, like they've been searching a couple episodes ago.
And Vanessa's not, hasn't been going to this mass, obviously, because she's surrounding herself with religious items. I mean, she's praying every night. She has crucifixes all over her rooms, and she even last episode, she was by the church. She didn't go in it, but she's still surrounding herself with religious things to keep her away from this thing that's after her. So it's a tough fight that this thing that's after her really wants her.
I'm telling you guys.
She's not having it.
Comment on YouTube, subscribe on iTunes, rate us if you haven't already. Tweet her at Serafini TV.
That's right.
Tweet me at Bobby DeMuro. We would love to debate you guys, hear from you guys on this. That's it this week on Penny Dreadful. Episode 5, Closer Than Sisters. That was a fun one. And remember, as we get going, Maria Menounos' new book, The Every Girl Guide, Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness, out in stores right now.
So
go get
good.
That if it's
Read
something
it.
You're interested in. Read it. Enjoy it. That's it. For Marissa, for Sarah, who had to leave us for Game of Thrones, I'm Bobby. We'll see you guys next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.